So we are here with Rich Siegel and Rob Schwartz, the writers of Happy Birthday Kevin, or Happy Birthday Douchebag, whatever you prefer. And first, I want to know from you two, how did you two end up meeting and being collaborators on this script?
We met at an ad agency. We were both copywriters at the time. And we both, as we got together and got to know each other, we both had an interest in doing something other than advertising. And I forgot what year it was, but I had done some screenwriting with some other copywriters before that, and thought Rob and I should get together and do some spec TV scripts. And we did. We did a whole lot of them. In fact, I was just cleaning out my garage a few weeks ago when the quarantine stopped, and came across like a tub full of old scripts, old wow. Shitty scripts. and we did every show. We had like Coach and a couple of Seinfelds and Frasier. And I mean, you name it. We did the Drew Carey show. Which, you know, and it took a while, like all screenwriting or script writing, it takes a while to, you know, get the rhythm and the flow of how to cram it all into 35 pages. And so it took us for a while to actually get good at it.
The year, I think, was 1957. No, but to Richard's point, I think something, you know, we were both pursuing this, this is in the late 90s, and, we would, I remember that, you know, we would do our kind of day jobs, and whether we went out to lunch or we'd have a, you know, a drink after work or whatever, we would start kind of riffing on ideas. And I think the one that popped was that Larry Sanders show.
Hmm.
Which was probably our last one. I think that was the last one. Yeah, it was the last one we did because we'd finally like gotten a little proficient at it.
Hmm. But I remember that one, we felt like, ooh, it was a good idea, and I think we got this thing, and I think that was the script that got Bill and Josh's attention.
Don't shortchange yourself. It was Rob's idea to do this one. Like, this was the A story on the show, and it was actually brilliant. It was like going to be his last show on the Larry Sanders Show, and his guest was going to be Gary Shandling.
Oh, that's perfect.
And so it really had a high concept to it. Although that had been done earlier with like Bewitched, she had a twin sister. And there had been other things, but in the setting of this HBO show, to have Larry Sanders have Gary Shandling on as a guest, it just opened itself up to a lot of like really fun stuff.
One thing that was funny about it, and thank you for saying that, Gary, when he was on the show, was recruiting everybody on the show because he was going to start his own show, but the only one he didn't recruit was Hank. So it was kind of a whole meta thing.
I like that. Yeah, I can see why that opened some doors. That's back.
My favorite scene in there was when the two of them find themselves standing next to each other at the urinals in the men's room, and they both get shy bladder, and neither one of them can pee. It's just a moment of kind of Simpsons uncomfortability that just goes on forever.
Before we move on to Mission Hill, so we've been doing this podcast series talking Mission Hill, and we typically will do a biography on the writer of the episode, see what they've done. And this interview started for me saying, who are these guys? Because there aren't a lot of credits on IMDb, but one of the credits you have, Rich, is you have a story credit on a movie I loved as a kid, Stay Tuned. So
yeah, me too.
Almost a decade before this Mission Hill was on the air, you had some experience in professional entertainment writing. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it before. I had worked with my old roommate who was a copywriter and his friend, Tom Parker. So Jim, Tom, and I had got together. This was in the late 80s, early 90s. And we had a high concept for a TV show or for a movie. And it was our first screenplay. And we just went at it for a while. And then in the process, my father passed away. Oh. And I had to drop out of it. But Jim and Tom went on to complete the screenplay. And we sold it for like close to $1 million, which is just like, that shit doesn't happen anymore, you know?
Wow, man. That's,
yeah.
I remember seeing that movie in theaters too. Yeah, it was, though the Three's Company joke was lost on me as a kid.
I just saw it while scrolling through Amazon Prime last night.
Oh, I got to check that out again.
So,
by the way, what happened to the money, Rich? So you invested it in what, an Apple? And now you're living next to Tony Robbins.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my cut, because I was only a story guy, was considerably less than those two guys. But it was a great experience. Great experience.
So that spec script got you a writing gig on Mission Hill. I'm guessing this was a freelance script submission?
No. I think we were freelancers. I remember we had to take two sick days off to do the writer's room day. So we still had our day jobs.
And we had an agent at the time, too. Didn't he get us in there with this?
Yeah.
I think so.
We were like the last priority clients of this guy.
Oh, God.
And did you have any existing relationship with Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein, any kind of Simpsons people? Or were you just very, very new to this TV writing world?
Very new. I mean, I was a Simpsons fanatic at the time, especially the years that those guys were in charge. And just like in awe of what they had done. And you know, we used to, my old art director partner and I, when we would come up with commercial ideas, we would steal liberally from The Simpsons. We would take their kind of formatting and their kind of the structure of their jokes and just, we would just lift it.
No, I was curious if you guys had a previous relationship, just because on the show Mission Hill, several episodes take place at an ad agency, and there's so many specifics in it that it felt, I was starting to think like, oh, were you guys giving them tips on it?
I think that they liked us because maybe you'd have to ask them. You know, we did come from advertising, and I think they probably had, you know, different questions and stuff that we could answer. Oh yeah, that happens in an agency, or that doesn't happen in an agency, or, you know, we do this kind of stuff. Because I think one of the characters, Jim, you know, worked in an agency. Mm-hmm. And so I can, you know, sort of recall, yeah, he would say that or wouldn't say that.
So was this your idea for an episode? Was it assigned to you? And did you have any input into the rewrite process? Because we know these scripts are pretty extensively rewritten before they hit the air.
It was assigned to us. Brought us in. I think they brought us in because we had the ad agency experience and it would play a little part in the show. But when we first got there, they said, well, here's a paragraph of what the treatment is going to be like on this show. And this is where we're going to go with it.
And I guess, what's it like to be brought on as a freelancer for a show that, you know, hadn't started airing yet? Like, how it's a little harder to find the voice when the show hasn't started airing yet.
The first thing I would say is, I think we were just flabbergasted and thrilled. I mean, it was just one of those things like, what, us? You want to bring, you know, us in? So part of it, I think, was us being kind of wide-eyed and slack-jawed at every moment. But I think to their credit, they had to show, and again, Rich, you've got your point of view, but I seem to recall they really knew what they wanted in the show. The characters were very well-formed. I seem to recall some kind of character Bible book. I mean, they really had a vision for it. And I think they were just looking for kind of grist for the mill. How much material could we throw out there? And then those guys could then, you know, curate and edit and make it great.
And so this episode, Happy Birthday, Kevin, it would not end up airing until maybe around 3 years after it was intended to air, which is pretty tragic for the series as a whole. Did you see it before then? And after you saw it, how close was it to your initial submission?
I don't remember where I saw it the first time, but I do remember when I saw it, I was like, holy shit, that changed a lot. And, you know, it was kind of a shock to see, but, you know, that's the process. I think what was really fascinating was when we did when we would go through the story beats. They had a woman they had brought over from The Simpsons, an older woman at the time, and she'd been with them forever. And she was like a courthouse transcriber. She wrote down everything. And, you know, that doesn't happen in advertising, but they told us why. It's like, because jokes get thrown out constantly and you want to have a record of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
By the way, one of the things I remember distinctly was the table read. And I remember that I think we went over to some little theater over there on Olympic Boulevard. And I just remember that experience that, you know, here are all the actors around. You know, you've got this script, and suddenly they would perform it. And I think Brian Posehn, I think that was his name, one of the actors. When this guy would deliver a line, he was just like, oh, my God, this is magic. I mean, I could I just watched this table read, you know?
That
is true. Actually, we just heard a table read that was from an episode that was never published, or sorry, never produced. And Brian Posehn can just say hi. Yeah. The entire room just erupts. It's so amazing to hear. And I've seen him do stand-up live. He's very, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you had the day in the rewrite room, and then and also the table read. Were those separate days then?
Yeah, we had 2 days in the writer's room. I remember it was over there in Santa Monica, and you know, that was an incredible experience. I think you know, I remember just walking in very intimidated in one way, because you know, I wasn't a professional Hollywood person. But I think being in advertising helped, because, you know, once people started pitching ideas, like, that's what we do. So we were able just to throw stuff out there, and, you know, we were kind of fearless in a way. At least I felt sort of fearless, because, well, these guys are funny, but I, you know, I think we can do, you know, we can come up with weird things too.
Yeah. And, but the other intimidating thing was that they were all Harvard guys, Harvard Lampoon guys. Mm. And Rob and I are from the second tier of schools, Syracuse and Michigan. So, you know, there was that.
Although in Michigan, we were arrogant enough to say that it was, you know, the Harvard. Harvard's the Michigan of the East.
That's good. That's, yeah. No, I've heard from other writers before, like being in the just surrounded by these Harvard graduates who've, you know, are friends with presidents in some cases. Like, that's it can be a bit daunting. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I think one of the keys to that, though, if you ever get into a situation like this, if someone says something, one of the best things you can say is, "Oh, that is just wonderful, Aristotelian," and then, you know, you're right in with them. Or if there's something financial, just mention whatever they mention. Just mention something about the bond market.
Like,
I mean, can you believe it? What happened in the bond market? Because no one really understands the bond market.
These are all great tips for our listeners.
I'm going to use these. Yes. Yeah.
So in a perfect world where Mission Hill would have continued for seasons and seasons, would you have seen yourself writing more? Did you have more episode, more ideas for the series? It seems like you enjoyed the experience.
Well, you know, we enjoyed the experience, but it, you know, in many ways, it was not exactly like I forgot the name of the movie, the Peter O'Toole movie, you know, about being in the room with all the great writers from way back in the 50s and 60s. I don't know. It was like, I found it, like, we were there like a couple of nights till 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, and you're sitting in this little tiny cramped room, and they brought in Burger King, and the place stinks of onion rings, and it get, you know, you're into the wee hours, and then they're on page 34. Okay, we need a joke here. And everybody's just sitting there going, "Oh, fuck." And it wasn't like you see in the movies. It was kind of like being on a chain gang, you know, a humor chain gang.
I guess it does make sense that Bill Oakley now is a fast food expert with his fast food video series. It's just like the many years spent in writing rooms made him an expert.
With all the Burger King.
Yeah, they always ate shit. All the time we were there, they just brought in shit food.
You know, what's interesting, though, about this show is that it was really ahead of its time, because when you think about it, it was conceived, you know, around 1998, 1999. And, you know, this is, you know, pre-9/11, you know, pre-Obama, you know, a gay couple, a mixed race couple, a baby whose name was Nameless. I mean, I could see Elon Musk naming his next kid Nameless, you know? I mean, it was really ahead of its time. So, you know, for me, as I was thinking about the show, it's like, I think now would be a great time to do this show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely ahead of its time, especially for a network like the WB, whose programming was way different than Mission Hill.
Yeah, it would have lived much better on one of the cables.
Yeah, no, it did so much better when it got on Adult Swim, when your episode finally aired on there, like that's where it should have been the whole time. We feel like, yeah. It fit in my, I guess, one more question about the draft you guys had. Do you have any particular moment you remember from it that you're like, "Oh, I wish that had been in there," like a scene you wish that had been put back in the show?
I'll tell you what I remember as I was watching the show again. I do remember, and Rich, I don't know if you recall this, I feel like you and I obsessed a lot over the snake scene.
Yes.
I don't know if that's coming back to you, but we spent a lot of time trying to get the beats out on the snake scene. And at the time that we were writing it, and again, I don't know if this really happened, but we both had daughters around the same time and they were young, you know, so we kind of lived in baby monitor culture.
Huh.
So I think the whole sort of the hand of the baby monitor being inside the baby, I feel like that was something that was very unique to how we were living.
Yeah. I tell you, the two scenes I do enjoy the most were when they go in the lab and there's that that giant ear on the mouse.
The mouse ear.
Yeah, that was funny. I think that was one of our jokes.
Mm.
And then I also remember, and this is what I love working with Bill and Josh. He said, "What, you know, like, what's a thing that like is going on in culture that we can make fun of?" And at the time, you know, it was those cheap Blues Brothers knockoff bands.
Great, yeah.
And they said, "Yeah, let's take that on." And then, you know, and then you sort of move the script in that direction so it feels more organic to whatever was happening in the show. But that's the way they operated, and it was fun.
I love those Blues Brother knockoffs in the episode there.
Justin Belushi and Timothy Ackroyd Williams.
Yeah, it feels like they trusted you guys a lot, because that episode ends up feeling like the series finale, because so many things pay off. It ends with a very emotional moment between the brothers. It's such an important episode for the show.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of Kevin's, you know, quest for home. You know, and mm-hmm. the, you know, not to get too, you know, heartfelt here, but I think what he realizes is that, you know, his home is when he's got his, you know, connection to his brother, you know, and there's like the scene, you know, where Moby's playing in the background, you know, right before Hardwick and Randazzo show up and, but that's the moment where he's home, you know?
Yeah, it was a shame the show got canceled when it did, because in those final two episodes, you guys have the second to last one, they were really getting more confident about having quieter moments, more emotional moments, not necessarily a show super reliant on big laughs.
Right.
Yeah. And by the way, the Harvard guys would call that the penultimate show, not this.
Oh, that's why I went to a state college, so that's what you get.
Rich, before you get this question, Hardwick was from Sean Hardwick. He was a guy we worked with. Did we work with someone named Randazzo?
I think you did. I think you went to high school or I'm pretty sure that name came from you.
Sam Randazzo, yeah.
Okay, that was my next question, because those names are so specific. We figured that either had to be like friends of Bill and Josh or you guys.
Later in this podcast, you will hear us say, "Where did those names come from?" And now it'll be answered here.
All the scripts I write, I pull names out of my high school yearbook of people I didn't like or wanted to get back at.
Yeah, he was the Hardwick was an account guy we worked with.
Oh, man.
So any other recollections about your brief time working on Mission Hill? This has been a very interesting story from both of you.
Yeah.
And it's great to hear this insight on a show that was just so short-lived.
Yeah, I think at the end, you know, like we had done a week. I think our whole thing lasted 1 week. And I thought, you know, like there was talk of like possibly bringing us on as staffers. But then, you know, like Rob and I were a lot older than these guys, and we'd been in advertising and making substantially more money. And then, you know, we found out what junior writers or what they call story editors or whatever they get for as a pay raise. Like, holy shit, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I seem to recall asking, I think, my father for a loan of like $50,000 so I could survive. And it was like, for what? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to write up this TV show. Okay, what kind of TV show? And I think his response is kind of like, for a fucking cartoon.
I guess, you know, what are you guys up to now? And what would you want to plug for our listeners?
Tell them, Rob, you got more to promote than I do.
Well, I'm the CEO of the ad agency that we worked at together. I don't know if your listeners really would be interested in me plugging anything. I think just, be kind to the good ads you see, because, there actually are good, talented people, trying to, create stuff that doesn't piss you off.
Yeah. And, Rich, and I know you've got several books that are out and available.
Yeah. 4 books, all on Amazon, all self-published. You know, like I just discovered this vanity publishing and just thought, well, why not? I'm going to do it. And I actually just started a fifth one. You know, I enjoy doing that. I have a blog. It's called Round 17, one word, .blogspot.com.
Awesome.
And, you know, it's doing – it's been – I'm on 11 years of doing it. You know, it's sort of like my therapy. And then I just recently, and this is kind of weird considering my age, I took a long-term freelance gig at a place that I'm not comfortable saying where, but there's the possibility that at the end of 3 months, they might bring me on staff. So, you know, it's like, wow, it's like another career to start, but whatever, it's all good.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being on our podcast and giving us this interview. It was great to hear from you.
Yeah. And listen, thanks to you guys for finding us, because we're not as prolific in Hollywood as maybe we could have been, but
exactly.
Finding us.
It took a minor amount of detective work, and that just meant DMing Rob.
Yes.
Yeah.
And by the way, thanks to all your listeners and stuff, and thanks to Bill and Josh, who, you know, gave us this opportunity. And I'm happy to say that we are very good Twitter friends. So,
oh, great. Yeah.